Get ready to let your inner geek out on this week's podcast. We're talking loudness. Yes, loudness. And compression. And limiting. And normalization. And much more. With audio specialist and old friend of the Radio Today programme, Rupert Brunn. I guarantee you'll find out something you didn't know, even if it's what exactly is a luff.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
Hello, I'm Trevor Dan. David Lloyd's Radio Moments and Stu Clarkson's news to come. But first, let's talk tech with Rupert Brunn. What is the difference between loudness and volume?
Well, loudness is defined under a standard, ITU RBS 1770, for those of you who want to download a copy. It's a way of measuring the intensity of an audio signal in a way that tries to mimic the way we hear loudness. If you look at a PPM or a VU meter or a true peak meter, it will tell you how much electrical signal is there. But that doesn't reflect accurately how we hear things. So we hear different frequencies with different loudness. If a sound is at a very high or very low frequency, it can be quite intense, but it won't sound very loud to us. So there is a standard for measuring loudness. Volume, well, you can define that almost any way you want, depending on what meter you use to measure it.
So this is why when we first go into a radio studio and they say to us, well, we'd like to peak everything at 5, or we want speech at 6 and music at 4, or whatever it is that radio station uses, that's kind of nonsense, isn't it?
Well, it's a good starting point. What a peak meter like a PPM or a true peak meter will do is it will let you manage the signal level so that you don't cause clipping, which is what happens when the signal gets bigger than some piece of equipment can handle and the waveform just gets flattened off and it sounds really, really horrible. It could damage the transmitter and it could get you in trouble with the regulatory authorities if you're a broadcaster. So you do need to keep an eye on the peaks of your signal to make sure they don't get too high, but it doesn't tell the whole story. So you could have two different pieces of audio and they could both measure the same on a PPM, but to real people, one of them might sound very, very much louder than the other. Typically, if one of them's had some dynamic range compression applied. So, you know, we all have these transmission processors on our output. They apply dynamic range compression. They make the quieter bits louder. So you end up with a much more dense waveform and two signals with the same PPM meter reading, one might sound an awful lot louder than the other.
I was reading an article that James Cridland has circulated that was written by, I think, a guy in America about loudness. And he's talking about how television is a bit ahead of us in radio with this because they've got regulations. Now, I was surprised to hear this because when I'm watching the television, the ads are just louder, aren't they? They just are. And is that because they're compressed?
Yes, so the people who make the adverts compress them. In America, there is regulation, it's called the CALM Act, and television content in America by law now has to be regulated so that each piece of content, whether it's a program or an announcement or a trail or an advert, should have the same subjective loudness as every other piece of content. In the UK, the main terrestrial broadcasters have agreed to adopt a standard which should make everything sound the same loudness as everything else. So there's much less of a problem than there used to be, but you do still get the odd piece of sound, yes, that's much louder than other pieces. And of course, if you're going to have some dynamic range in your content, so parts of the program louder than others, then even if you measure the average loudness of the whole program and set it to the correct level, there will still be parts of the program which are louder than that and parts which are quieter. And I don't think any audio engineer would want to legislate against that. It's part of the creative process, making some bits louder and some quieter, light and shade. So if the adverts come at a part of the program that's quieter, then they're going to sound louder. If the adverts come at a part of the program that's a lot louder, they'll sound quieter. You can't get around that because there are two factors at play. There's the loudness, which under European guidance should be minus 23 LUFS, loudness units, full scale. So each program item
I've
measure.
I've learned something today. A LUF. Say that again. Luff. It's got minus Luff. 23 LUFS.
Minus 23 LUFS is the standard. Loudness units, full scale. And so all the content items on UK broadcast television should measure minus 23 LUFS. But within a programme, there will be a range of loudness. So you will still find that when the adverts come, there might be a jump in volume level, or when you change channel, there might be a jump because you might be jumping from a quiet part of one program to a loud part of another. But it should be a lot better than it used to be.
So if I'm looking at my own voice that I'm recording here into Adobe Audition, and it's got obviously it's got some peaks and troughs, what I tend to do when I get to mixing this podcast is I simply go to a little button up here which says hard limit to 0.1 dB. And why do I do that? Well, because it makes me sound a bit better. But what it also does is it lifts up all my rather phlegmy, glutinous breaths. So I have to then go back through and pull them back down again. Am I doing the right thing by going for hard limiting, or should I be finding some other way of compressing or limiting the signal?
Well, it depends very much on what sort of sound you're after, of course. You know, it's a creative choice. So I think very often you need a bit of dynamic range reduction on content like this, on podcasts. Very often people play pre-recorded items into their program or their podcast, which were recorded by other people or at a different time and have a different loudness. So some sort of dynamic range compression is useful. If you were to keep the full dynamic range and I were to listen to your podcast whilst I was driving or cooking or something like that, and I've got a lot of background noise and you had too much dynamic range, I'm going to have to keep turning the volume knob up and down, which is probably going to make me fed up and I'll stop listening. On the other hand, if you compress it too hard, then you'll end up in a position where everything is very loud all the time and it's really not pleasant to listen to. So I think you just have to experiment and use your ears as an audio specialist to decide whether it's doing the thing you want it to or not. But certainly, yes, experiment.
What does normalise mean?
Normalising measures, if you've got a piece of content, it looks through to find the part where the voltage is the greatest and measures how far below the maximum voltage the system can handle that might be. So you might measure it. So if you say that the maximum voltage the system can handle is 0 dB, you might record some content, and then when the normalization algorithm measures it, it says, okay, the loudest piece is 5 dBs below the peak that we can handle. So it will turn up the gain of the whole thing by 5 dBs. So it doesn't change the dynamic range. The dynamic range is still whatever it was, but everything has been moved up by 5 dBs. So this is generally a good thing to do because it makes the signal have a consistent maximum level and it doesn't mess with the dynamic range. You do have to be careful not to normalize to too high a level, because you need some headroom further down the stream. What some people have done is normalized to 0 dBs or minus 0.1. And what you might find is that by the time that actually comes out of the listener's earphones, having been through lossy codecs and replay devices and digital and analog converters, that it's distorting. You need to leave at least a dB of headroom when you're creating content, because there will be overshoots created further downstream.
So when I finish this podcast today, I'm going to have bits of me, bits of Stuart Clarkson recorded in Yorkshire, bits of David Lloyd recorded in Nottingham, some old clips, some current clips, you off Skype. Should I just mix the whole thing according to how I hear it and then press normalise to minus 3 dB? Would that make the whole listen better?
Yeah, I think there's no substitute for a trained pair of ears and a trained hand on a fader. There really isn't any substitute for that. What you might like to try is using a loudness meter rather than a peak meter to measure it. As I say, you do still need to keep an eye on the peaks, but some broadcasters are now moving towards using a loudness meter to create content rather than a peak meter. And people can find it quite liberating. Program makers can find it enables them to enjoy a greater range of dynamics rather than being restricted to, well, everything must peak 5. So there are some loudness meters. You can buy software ones as plugins for your audio editing system. Or if you Google BAP tools, which is Broadcast Audio Production Tools, the BBC Research Department have put some software loudness meters into the public domain, and you can just download them for free.
Oh, what a splendid idea. Well, we'll try that. One other question then about making a podcast in your living room or your office, like so many of us do these days. There is, even on Adobe Audition and certainly on many of the other software packages, there's a lot of stuff about graphic equalizers and notch filters and parametric equalizers and FFT filters, whatever that means. I've done what you said, actually, and experimented with almost all of these, and they normally end up making whatever you've recorded sound just a bit too electronic.
Yes, there are a huge range of creative tools, or another way to put it is that there are an endless number of ways of messing up your audio.
Yes.
I think if you're recording speech, then it's quite a good idea to have a high-pass filter that rolls off the very low frequencies so that you get rid of any buzz or hum or rumble from passing traffic. So a high-pass filter somewhere around 70 to 120 hertz, somewhere around there, is not a bad idea. But apart from that, don't mess with it, I think. The important thing for podcasts and radio programs is that the different items within them should all have a consistent loudness, unless there's a good artistic reason for them not to. One of the real turnoffs for me listening to radio programs or podcasts is if you've got an interview with two people and one of them is much, much louder than the other, and you have to keep turning the volume up and down. And I'm afraid there are quite a number of podcasts, even those that are produced by people who are talking about radio and audio, where they're really not very nice to listen to, because the loudness of one speaker will be very much greater than the loudness of another, and there's really no need for that.
What do you think of the argument about keeping podcasts in mono?
I don't think it's necessarily a good thing. If it's a monologue, then why not? But if you have several people talking, then having them panned to slightly different positions in the stereo image can really help you to understand who's saying what when. Probably just this part of your podcast with you and I, it's not such an issue. But if you had four or five people having a discussion, then certainly panning them a bit can make it easier for the listener to distinguish one voice from another.
So the ear will cope with mixing mono and stereo formatted recordings in the same program?
Yes. What you do have to watch out for is any possible change in loudness between the stereo and mono content. The whole loudness thing, of course, has been quite topical lately. There have been well-documented loudness wars in record production where everybody wants their record to be louder than everybody else's. And radio, unlike television, is consumed in environments that can be noisy. Generally, people watch television in a quietish living room, as where they consume radio in the kitchen or commuting, and podcasts on the train. And so that there's a difference, although increasing consumption of video content on tablets and mobile phones will reduce that. But I think, you know, that there's a real problem with the loudness wars, because there is this drive in the record industry and in some broadcasters to be the loudest. And back in the days of AM and to some extent FM, I could understand that, because people were turning a tuning knob and stopping when they got to something loud. And so having a loud station was an advantage, and it can give you greater coverage for the same transmitter power. But I am rather saddened by the fact that some in the radio industry still think that being louder will get them more listeners on digital platforms, where people decide what to listen to and they click on a favorite or they press a preset before they've heard what it sounds like. Mm. So actually, how loud you are doesn't have any bearing on people's choice as to whether they're going to listen to you or not, because when they click that button, they've got no idea how loud it's going to be. And some organizations are compressing their audio to the point where it really doesn't sound very nice in order to be the loudest on the dial, completely overlooking the fact that, of course, the listener has a knob on the device marked volume, and if you compress your audio to make it really loud, they'll just turn it back down till it is the loudness they want it to be. And if you've compressed all the dynamic range out of your signal, and then people listen to it at a lower volume level, it just sounds flat and uninteresting. The Norwegians have actually standardized for radio broadcasting. They've introduced a standard for loudness. So if you go to Norway, all the radio broadcasts are at a standard loudness. They've not gone for minus 23 lufs, which television use. They've gone for minus 15, which is a bit louder. But they are all the same. The reason they've gone for something louder is because radio is consumed in noisier environments than television. And also because some devices that people use to listen, particularly to podcasts, you know, iPods and iPhones and the like, have limits on the amount of gain and how much sound they will feed to the headphones in order to protect people's hearing when they're listening to very, very heavily compressed rock music. If you then listen to a minus 23 lufs normalized signal, you can't actually get it loud enough on those devices to be able to hear it clearly when you're on the back of a bus. So they've gone for minus 15 lufs, and it's a brave thing to do. They're the first country to have standardized the loudness of radio.
Rupert, you've been absolutely brilliant, as you always are. Not many lols, but quite a lot of luffs.
If people want help with loudness, they can always contact me on www.brun.co.uk. There's a contact me page there. So I can help people with loudness.
Our thanks to Rupert Brun. I hope you think this episode sounds better because of his tips. In mono now, here's Stu Clarkson with the latest Radio Today news.
Trevor, thank you. More sad news as we say goodbye this week to two more broadcasters who've passed away. Stephen Rhodes has died aged 66. He had motor neuron disease. Stephen was on stations including BRNB, Beacon, Radio Shropshire and Three Counties Radio. And BBC Radio Derby's Andy Potter has died just a few weeks after telling listeners he'd been diagnosed with cancer. Andy was 55 and had been at the station for the last 18 years. Radio Indy's unique smooth operations and Above the Title are all coming together as part of a reorganisation by owners 7 Digital. The companies have been trading separately but will now operate as one team. It's nearly 3 years since UBC Media merged with 7 Digital. Lots of news of presenter changes this week. Rob Chandler is going back on air at Radio Norwich just a couple of months after Anglian Radio let him go. The group's new owners, Celador, have reinstated him, and he's also on North Norfolk Radio and The Beach. Clint Boone has a new daily show in Manchester. He's joining Communicorp's XS. He used to do the same slot, Drive Time, on XFM Manchester. Signal One has announced its new breakfast show. Jenny and Foxy, aka Jenny Longdon and John Fox, off of Foxy and Giuliano and BR&B and Free Radio, take over from Andy and Louise, who disappeared from Signal after announcing on air that management were planning a refresh. Ken Snowden is retiring this week after more than 40 years working in BBC local radio as a presenter and assistant editor. He's been at Radio Cleveland and BBC Tees for the last 20 years or so. His Sunday show is being taken over by Goffey. And Alex Lester is going daily again after a recent spell covering on BBC WM's breakfast show. He's now got the job permanently. He replaces Adrian Goldberg, who's quitting the programme to focus on his work for Radio 4 and 5 Live. Staying with BBC local radio changes, did you hear the audio of Howard Bentham this week talking about his upcoming move from breakfast to drive at BBC Radio Oxford?
What I'm certainly not going to do is, because I've got too much respect for you as our audience and too much self-respect as well, is to sit here and air any dirty laundry. Certainly not my style, but as ever with radio, it's all about the audience. You will have the final say. So I'm not going to dwell on why all this is happening. Just let me tell you what is happening. From next Monday, David Priever is going to be sitting in as the permanent host of the show. I genuinely wish David all the best and a safe drive in from St Albans of a morning.
It's worth a listen in full on radiotoday.co.uk, as is the radio fail of the week from Radio 2 newsreader Claire Runacres.
NHS England says thousands of patients may have come to harm because of an administrative mix-up. About 500,000 documents containing medical information were mistakenly put in storage.
That's it for this week. More news, of course, every day at radiotoday.co.uk.
Thank you, Stu. And by the way, next Monday, March the 6th, is the closing date for the British Podcast Awards. You can see more at britishpodcastawards.co.uk. David Lloyd after this.
Your best content, shareable and discoverable on any platform. Oasis from Broadcast Bionics helps you build a closer relationship with your listeners. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk. Radio Moment.
Yes. One programme you always remember is your debut programme, and I'm sure Simon Mayo remembers his as he transferred from BBC Radio Nottingham to Radio 1.
Simon Mayo through till 3 o'clock today, and Gary did say, please make your bit in the middle as much like mine as possible, except not quite as brown.
I had been put with another producer who was Gary Davis's regular producer, who was very, very scary. For, you know, for a local radio boy like me going down, Paul Williams was just, he was just mad and crazy, you know. So, and I was more terrified of him than I was of actually doing the show. But then he was taken ill. Thank you, Lord. And no, it was nothing serious. And Malcolm, who was the exact opposite and was Steve Wright's producer, was very laid back. And he was saying, he popped his head round the door 5 minutes before I was due to start, 20 to 1, and said, everything all right, Simon? I said, yes, fine. Do you want anything? No. And he just shut the door and went, which was exactly what I wanted. I wanted to be left alone.
It's true, isn't it? How often are you just about to do something really special or complex and you just want people to go away, leave you alone? And also the question is, how many other people have gone straight from BBC Local Radio to Radio 1?
Mayo, Simon Mayo.
It's 25 years this week since Lynx FM was born, then one of the earliest licensees from the new regulator, the Radio Authority. The station filled in one of the remaining areas of the UK which didn't have commercial radio.
At last, the wait is over. Welcome to Lynx FM 102.2. It's Sunday the 1st of March 1992. I'm Nick Jackson until 12 o'clock midday today. Right now, it's 7 minutes past 10 o'clock. The wait is over, your brand new 24-hour local radio station serving historic Lincolnshire and South Humberside on 102.2.
I listened to people saying, but Lincolnshire's not got enough population, it's too rural, you're not going to make the revenue, we were in difficult times, you're being too ambitious, it's not going to work, but we'll give it a whirl. Of course, I was literally a one-man band. I'd got my shareholders together, but there was, other than our chairman, Navid Hudson-Davis, nobody else had been involved in putting the licence together.
Michael Betton, determined as ever, the first and current chief executive of Lynx FM. Happy Silver Jubilee, and happy memories for me as well, 25 years ago, since a very sleepless night. BBC Local Radio is, of course, much older, indeed heading for its 50th anniversary later this year. This week in 1971, it arrived in what was then called Humberside.
I am at present with the Lord Mayor of Hull, Alderman Colonel R.A. Alex Smith, in the Lord Mayor's parlour in the Guild Hall.
I am very happy to wish Radio Humberside and all connected with it the best of good fortune. I'm confident that this local broadcasting medium of the BBC, based on this city, will prove of advantage not only to the people of Kingston upon Hull.
But he wasn't in his parlour, was he, by the sound of it? He was on a traffic island. BBC Radio Humberside's official launch. But life wasn't quite that simple. Paul Heine.
Day one was a bit of a variable feast because the country was in some difficulty around about that time. We were having rotated power cuts due to industrial action and problems the government were having and so on and so forth. The upshot of it all was that the power was going off to people's houses. It was being switched off for considerable periods of each day. Now, we had not officially come on air. I think the official launch date was February, but all this was happening, and we thought, well, we can't sit by and let the people of Humberside sit in darkness when we could do something to help. So I remember very distinctly we decided we would come on air early, which we did by several, well, I think it was about a couple of months.
This is BBC Radio Humberside on Rediffusion Channel B with a special news and information service.
Radio Humberside, medium wave 202, VHF 96.9. Rediffusion Channel B, yeah.
Yeah, those jingles are classics, aren't they? Almost as good as these were.
Summer radio on the Simon Bay Show. Hear his music grow on the Simon Bay Show.
The work of Chris Rainbow, who died this week last year, famous for his own songs and also radio jingles and working with Kenny Everett too. Happy 70th birthday this week to the fourth ever presenter of Radio 1 Breakfast. So who's that then? One, the first was Tony Blackburn. Woof woof. That's the one. Second was Noel Edmonds. Third was DLT, wasn't it? Quack, quack. Oops, was it? Quack, quack. That's it. So the fourth must have been this chap.
Okay, replacing that one to Kathy Riley from Billericay. And replacing another one in a second. First of all, Michael Wynn from York said, currently listening to the show, and I've just heard you play Rainbow Chaser by Nirvana. Certainly one of those records we've been asked for probably more than any other. It's a great song, he says, possibly the most frequently played on your show, certainly the most memorable. I don't mind asking for...
Happy 70th birthday, Mike Reed. It's exactly 15 years since the Today programme on Radio 4 lost one of its most recognisable voices.
Good morning, this is Today with Brian Redhead and Sue McGregor.
Yes, this week in 2002, Sue McGregor said farewell.
The news this morning is that the people of Berlin, East and West, have spent the night celebrating their new freedom to travel across the wall. Good morning, this is a special edition of Today. The Allied forces in the Gulf have begun their all-out ground offensive to retake Kuwait. The main news this morning is that President Bush has signalled that America will retaliate for the devastating terrorist attacks on New York.
Farewell, Sue McGregor, from the Today programme 15 years ago. Sue's been on Radio 4 for most of its life, whether on the World at One or Woman's Hour or Today, and more recently, of course, The Reunion. So with Jim Nocte joining John Humphreys for his first Today programme 23 years ago...
It's Monday the 28th of February.
The Forces programme becoming the General Forces programme, the precursor to Radio 2 73 years ago...
This is the General Forces programme.
The Radio Trent franchise not rolled owing to a record of industrial action 40 years ago... And BBC Director General Mark Thompson recommending that Six Music and the Asian Network close 6 years ago. Those are this week's Radio Moments.
And we love it, Radio Moments.
Radio Moments was in stereo. Hope you've enjoyed this week's Radio Today programme. We've got another round table next time with Phil Maguire, Brett Spencer and others, TBC. So please join me for that. I've been Trevor Dan, normalised to within an inch of my life. See you next time.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.